Good morning, everyone. If you are here, you are at the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee. I am David Richardson, the chair of the committee. Today, we are joined by Commissioner Kristen Rosen Gonzalez. Thank you for joining us. Commissioner Samuelin is not available. We wish him well in his recovery, and we'll be joined by Commissioner Arriola very shortly. And with that, Rafael, could you let people know at home how they can join?
Sure. So good morning, everyone. Today's meeting of the committee has been scheduled in a hybrid format with a quorum of the committee physically present and remaining members, staff, and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting virtually, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499, that's toll free, and enter the webinar ID, which is 863-6059-5462#. Or you could log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 863-6059-5462#. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they're using the Zoom app, or dial *9 if you're participating by phone. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I know, Amy, we gave you a time certain at 9:30 for the Morningfield item, but it's Commissioner Arriola's item, so we'll wait till he gets here, if that's okay. Thank you so much. John, you've joined us. Why don't we take up item 16 first? Do you need to read it, Rafael, or?
No. Item 16 is discussion on funding opportunities for landscaping and security improvements of the Normandy Shores neighborhood rear gates.
Good morning. Do you want to start us off on that? Let's hear from the staff first, and then we'll turn to you, John. Thanks so much.
Okay. So, good morning. Elizabeth Muro, Assistant Director of Facilities and Fleet Management, for the record. So we researched the possibility of installing two additional renewing the gates at Normandy Shores, as well as landscaping, and also installing speed bumps. And we came up with a rough order of magnitude of $100,000.
John, good morning.
Good morning.
Why don't you tell us, I know we've all talked about this before, but why don't you refresh our memory and tell us what we've got here.
So I'll just read a little bit of a prepared statement just because it keeps me in line. So as part of the agreement and compromise allowing non-Normandy Shores tax district residents to utilize the Normandy Shores tax district resident access only gates, which are the rear gates and the front gate, we had come up with a agreement to possibly look at beautifying the rear gates and installing some safety devices, particularly speed bumps or speed pillows. Therefore, we drafted some preliminary drawings to show what this concept could look like. I didn't bring all of the drawings, but there's two in front of us, and also a plan for the speed pillows. First and foremost, there's an ongoing speeding issue down North Shore Drive, Fairway Drive, and South Shore. Speeding is the number one concern vocalized by our residents, and it is... Their concern is safety of the children, pets, and pedestrians. Second, the gates are unsightly and give the impression of easy access when approaching. Furthermore, these gates continually are being hit by vehicles and trucks, and by redesigning these gates, we can both improve the aesthetics and show a physical separation of the residents-only entry point for tax district residents. This physical barrier will not only improve the entry point looks, but also deter people from trying to get through the rear gates and subsequently causing damage to city property. Through our tax district, the damage to these gates is somewhere around $20,000 to $25,000 a year, every year, like clockwork. The gates get hit by vehicles about every 2 weeks, causing city property damage and safety concerns when they're broken and out of service. So it's both for aesthetics and security. Physical barriers are the best way to deter people from entering into the rear gates, in our opinion. So as you can see, there's a couple of renderings here. And this is the way it looks currently. This is South Shore at Ray Street, the rear gate on South Shore. This is a rendering of some sort of structure, very much looking like the front entrance to Normandy Shores. So the front entrance has something similar to this, with Normandy Shores written across here, and with some kind of pineapples or something on the top. And here's the existing gate. So kind of before and after, similar perspectives. And this is also South Shore, coming from the single-family residential side, exiting to the multifamily side, showing the perspective before and after.
Going around, right? That those cones or whatever, or golf carts, and so that's a security issue.
Yeah. So one of the problems we've had in the past is the distance. You know, number one, the aesthetics of the poles, but the distance between the poles allowed small vehicles like the Fiat 500 or a Mini to pass through there. In one instance, I got a call. There was a City of Miami Beach sanitation truck that was doing a three-way turn, pulled in this way, backed in this way, and turned this way. And as that person was backing up, some person that lived outside here that parks in front of the neighbors, which is another problem, was pulling through this sidewalk through these poles and subsequently came out while the gentleman was backing up the City of Miami Beach utility truck. I was called. I went over, met with the police officer, pulled the video. The woman lied and said she did not go through that area, that she was just pulling out of this area, and subsequently she was ticketed. But it has been a problem for many years. Property management did move the poles a little bit closer, but again, it's something that's been a concern for a long time.
Okay, great. I know months ago we talked about putting this in the budget cycle for the next fiscal year. Did you have any questions?
Yes. How many homes are there in Normandy Shores?
There are 350 parcels, give or take one or two.
So if we were to assess each individual home, what would the cost of that be per home? It would be minimal, David. If we sent out an assessment to the homeowners, it would be like 300. Could we facilitate something like that? Simply because this is, you know, for their neighborhood. I know that the Sunset Islands did something similar, and they paid for it themselves. So I think that would be great. I mean, if we could just facilitate collecting this money for you and get it done without having it in the budget. Because this is, you know, a benefit for the residents of Normandy Shores. It's a very minimal amount when you look at it.
They have an existing special taxing district right now, and so it could certainly be included in their millage. It's not really an assessment. They just set the millage rate to be able to afford their normal budget plus projects, I guess you might say.
So I think the conversation, though, that we had some months ago was that there has been a history of us doing this for other neighborhoods, so to be consistent. So, for example, in last year's budget, we just did this for Stillwater Drive. It was over 100,000. Was it 150 or 170?
About 100,000, yes.
About 100. So we just did this in the current fiscal year budget for Stillwater Drive.
Yeah, but residents can come and go in Stillwater Drive. I believe on Normandy Shores they can't. I mean, you know, if you don't live on the island, but it's a pass through. We're going to tax our residents, and then they can't use that gate.
So Stillwater right? is a peninsula. So Stillwater's a peninsula, mm-hmm. So people don't, residents, only residents would have a need to go into Stillwater. With Normandy Shores, actually, and this was before your time, we had quite a discussion about the
that gate that doesn't open. I find that frustrating that, you know, you go in to use the club, and then you on one side of the neighborhood, the gate doesn't work if you don't have a fob.
Yes, for security issues for our neighborhood, it's part of the original tax district agreement. Back in 93, mm-hmm. that these rear gates would be for residents only. Subsequently, through the years, something happened, and clickers were issued to non-residents. So as part of working out this agreement that Commissioner Richardson was heavily involved in, was we made an agreement that certain folks that live on the island outside of the gates would have access to the RFID clickers. This way we still maintain our security, but still allow the folks that live in the neighborhood to be able to use that as a pass-through. Okay. Very contentious issue, but we worked through it, And as part of that agreement, you know, we thought that the best thing for everybody on the island was to improve the beauty and the security of the island through speed bumps and this rendering. So
this rendering would allow people going to the club to come and go.
No.
I don't think that's fair because then they have to go all the way around. I understand everyone has from to your go all point the way of around. View, but
since 1993, everyone has had to go all the way around. Those gates have never been, because they're non-manned, mm-hmm. they've never been for general public. The mm-hmm. whole idea of a tax district with a guard is everybody has one access point and one egress point, unless you live there. If you live there, then you have the convenience of going out of the rear gates.
Yeah, so, we spent a lot of time on this about a year and a half ago on the gates, and the communities worked together to come to an arrangement that in the end they both agreed upon, and then the commission ratified the work that was done by the community. So that's been vetted. So what we're doing today is talking about, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
First, we're talking about the Normandy Shores. Some months ago, we had talked about helping them with some security issues at the back gate and the gates, as we did with Stillwater Drive in the current fiscal year budget. So Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez is, I don't want to misspeak, but I think you're in favor of asking them to pay for it themselves.
Well, if you look at the price and the cost per home, because there's over 300 homes, so if we added a teeny little bit of millage onto their taxing district, it would be under $300 per home, you know? And I think that really is the precedent that we should set, what Sunset Island did. And in the future, if a place like Stillwater would like us to have, give those improvements. And I think Biscayne Point taxed themselves on something that they were doing, or put that into a bond project. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but it would be so minimal for them.
Well, I personally feel like we should put this in the budget. It's $100,000 for this next fiscal year. We just did this in the current fiscal year for Stillwater, and I think that it's a fair thing to do to be consistent. So you talk about the value of the homes. The value of homes also generate a lot of tax revenue for the city, so these homeowners are paying quite a bit in taxes to the city, and I think this is something that we should help them with.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, the comment that, because of these homes, they can afford it, they also generate a lot of money to the city, and, we also have to reinvest in the community. I mean, otherwise, tax burden is only going to be borne by the very, very few, and there's got to be a balance. So I'm open to putting it in the budget for sure, and then we'll see how it shakes out.
If that's a motion, I will second it. John, what else do you need from us?
I see an estimated cost.
I'm sorry?
An estimated cost. This is a discussion item. I don't have
anything.
So the estimated cost is $100,000.
Okay. So why don't you work?
It's kind of like saying, we want to improve the park in the Normandy Shores neighborhood. Oh, but because the homes can afford it, they should have to pay for that park.
Well, no, I'm saying that we should set a precedent.
That's not how we treat
some neighborhoods.
We're
going to
do this in an orderly way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to set a precedent like, oh, because the homes can afford it, let's make them pay for things that the rest of the community throughout the city of Miami Beach is normally borne by all taxpayers. So I just want to be very careful when we start saying things like that.
No.
You're recognized.
Thank you. I think that certain neighborhoods pay for things themselves and certain neighborhoods don't. And I think that we should set a precedent for all neighborhoods if they're doing something specific to them and they have a special taxing district like this. I believe Sunset Islands, they paid for it. They taxed themselves. They paid for a new gatehouse. They did it. I just think that moving forward, maybe we can strike a deal and say, we'll put in half the money. And, you guys, especially if you have a special taxing district, you guys also contribute a little bit, I think, per home. It's a very small amount.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Please, come on.
We'll
take a look.
Did I not? Did you not?
It's not correct. You were correct. Initially, we agreed to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But when it went double the budget, the city did the project. It doubled the budget, and then the city paid for it.
Okay, so we did pay for it there?
You did pay for it.
Oh, because I thought that initially you guys were going to pay for it.
We were initially, and then
it doubled the budget.
When they went over the budget by twice. The city said, we'll pick up the whole thing.
Okay. So I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, I mean, listen, I suppose it's okay. I do think that moving forward, we should set some sort of policy about it, though.
Okay. Well, and if you'd like to bring a resolution, maybe the commission would entertain that. So with that, I think, John, we've got an amount of $100,000. And can you work with Mr. Bowes and the community over the coming months so that we can figure out exactly what we're doing? So that, John, if you'll put this in the budget, so it'll come back on the next budget workshops for discussion. And then if it's the will of the commission to approve the budget with this in it, it will happen. And if it's not the will, it will not happen. So, but if you'll, John, work with the staff, and let's start moving forward with plans, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for your time. Okay, with next, we're going to call the mooring field. She needed to get out of here, and that we were going to. So, Amy, come on up, and this is item four. Before I do that, John, we had several items that were deferred. I know Commissioner Samuelin asked for his items. Could you go through, starting with number one, and just tell us what items are deferred?
Yes. So there's several items, so I'm going to mention them and try to do this slowly. So number two, number three, number five, number six, number eight, number nine, number 10, 12, and 13 are all deferred.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Amy, this is item number four. Why don't you go ahead and tee it up for us?
Sure.
Unless, Commissioner Ariel, it's your item. Would you like to tee it up?
Yeah. I guess Amy's going to give us an update on something that's been in the works for several years now at this point, which is, you know, studying, you know, whether or not to move forward on, not just moving forward, but, you know, where we're at with the study on potentially creating a mooring field on the west side of Miami Beach, along the islands, potentially expanding it further, and then, you know, where we're at with our consultants, grants, et cetera.
Okay, great. Well, good morning, Commissioners. Amy Knowles, Chief Resilience Officer. Pleased to be here this morning giving you an update on this important project. So today we're going to share the most recent information that we do have regarding the planning of the mooring field. We're going to share our best recommendations on our strategy in terms of the boundaries and estimate of costs and discuss the preferred management strategy. This is really important for us to be able to tie this project to the capital budget process this summer, and we'll go through that. We do have a recommendation as administration, but we'd also like to lay out the different options and hear from you and your committee. So this concept has been around for many years. It has been discussed in multiple committees. We've had many public meetings. We've had many resident meetings. Even recently, we've had multiple meetings. So I would say overall, we did hear support for the mooring field, but there are some people that are concerned about where the boats will shift to, primarily around Sunset Island. So I did want to share that with you to be completely transparent. This city has reached out to Commissioner Higgins' office to talk about the establishment of mooring fields. And the latest on that is she's working on an item for the county mayor to develop a process to establish anchoring limitation areas to address how these boats may move. So we are pleased to share for the past couple of months, we have obtained grant funding in November of 2021 and also April of 2022. So we now have $273,000 for design and permitting. Today I do have our consultant, Tim Blankenship. He's with Moffitt and Nickel, and he's going to provide an overview of the recent planning work. So the focus of this work has been to prepare the city for design. We can't issue information to even begin the design till we have better understanding about the environmental regulatory insight. So we did have multiple meetings with the regulatory agencies, pre-application meetings. And this is important because the mooring field is in Biscayne Bay, so it is a highly protected, outstanding Florida water, so it's very restrictive in terms of its uses, and it's a designated aquatic preserve. So it's not like the rest of Florida. It is a very unique situation to establish this mooring field. So with that, I'll just turn it over to Tim. He has a very brief presentation, and then we can answer any questions.
Thank you. You're recognized.
Yes. Good morning. Tim Blankenship, Moffitt & Nickel consultant for the city on this morning field project. So we have a presentation. I understand you can bring it up for us.
PJ, do you? Okay, perfect. There
great.
It is.
Okay, thank you. Next slide, please. Okay, this is the master plan that was developed back in 2020 that was presented at public workshops. Generally, the limits of the mooring field extend from just north of the Venetian Causeway there around Sunset Harbor and extend south all the way to the 395 bridge coming into Miami Beach there at Fifth Street. So that generally just shows with the different colors and the different phases that have been presented and discussed to date with the residents and with the city. These are just initial polygons for planning purposes. This is not the final design. Mainly this was just to present to the public, receive feedback, and we're continuing to work along with these phases and present this information, as Amy mentioned, to the regulatory agencies. Next slide, please. What have we done this year to date? We've conducted a public workshop earlier this year. We've had several meetings with residents. There's been quite a bit of outreach with this project. We've discussed some of the issues, just like entitlements that you have with upland properties and upland developments. We have entitlement issues out in the water, specifically with the state lands, who owns the state lands. In this case, it's the state of Florida. So we've had some discussions on submerged lands. We've looked at easements. There's quite a few utilities and other encumbrances that are coming across the bay. Also, there are some existing docking facilities and waterfront improvements that have state submerged lands along the shoreline, along the West Avenue neighborhood. We've looked at some aerial photographs to kind of understand historic anchoring, where the majority of the vessels currently anchoring. Also, we've reviewed the other projects that are currently in permitting or have permit applications to the regulatory agencies in the area of the mooring field. There's been a lot of changes in construction budgets, as many of you know, so we've updated the opinion of construction costs to look at updated construction costs, and then we've also had some very productive and very informative meetings with the environmental agencies. Next slide, please. So just very quickly on the encumbrances, won't go into too much detail. The areas in the kind of the brown color are existing submerged lands leases. You can see there are several docking facilities. Those of you familiar with the neighborhood, those obviously would have to be accounted for in any planning of the mooring field limits. We've found there are some utilities, everything from gas to FPL, so we would have to design and account for those easements and avoid any impacts with potential utilities. We've gotten an idea on, Amy mentioned that the city has reached out to the county relative to the new anchoring ordinance that's been enacted by the state through the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, where those limits might be relative to the mooring field boundaries, and so we've got that on an overlay now. Next slide, please. And here we are. This kind of gives you just very quickly, many of you live in the community and are aware of some of the anchoring issues. This is a 2005 slide aerial showing kind of the trends of the existing anchor. There's quite a few vessels out there now. Next slide, please. And then this is showing about 67 vessels. Next slide is 2015, I think.
Next slide, please, PJ.
Thank you. And you can see it went from 67 to almost 100 vessels. It varies on a daily basis. It's a continuing concern in terms of regulating the anchorage. There's issues with some of these vessels pumping sewage. They're continuing to drop anchors and potentially impacting some seagrass beds. All of us are very sensitive here in the community to the health of Biscayne Bay. And then there are some activities that go on certain times of night. With the housing crisis currently, there's a lot of people that are finding, you know, living in these vessels is a very economical way to live out there. So there's some concerns with the residents and the people that are staying in the anchorage. And really what the city is looking for is a way to kind of regulate this and make sure that all the state laws and local laws are being followed, and also to improve the environment and water quality within Biscayne Bay. Next slide, please. So what we've done is we showed you the original phases. This is just kind of, you know, we put together this aerial map showing kind of what the density looks like. You know, there's been concerns looking at the swing circles and just how many boats and you know, would you know, I have, if I'm a resident, I have a view of Biscayne Bay. I'm looking out, how many vessels are there. So this is just kind of a very kind of a 10,000-foot altitude look at in terms of the overall density. It's quite... it's very sparse, actually, compared to what we do for other clients on mooring fields. We're looking at, you know, a slip per, you know, 1.5 acres or something like that. So it's very, very low density, and we can increase that density depending on impact input from the city if needed. But this just kind of gives everybody an idea. If all four phases were constructed, this kind of gives you an idea of the number of vessels that might be at anchor at any given time. Next slide. As Amy mentioned, we've had some very productive and informative meetings with the agencies. Believe it or not, the mooring field is under jurisdiction of three agencies at the local, state, and federal levels. One of the main agencies that has jurisdiction is Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. We call it FWC. Corps of Engineers, Florida Department of Environmental Protection, and, of course, here in Miami-Dade County, we have Durham. A key issue, really, is the submerged lands lease, and we're pleased to report that because you can't just put these anchors out there without having a submerged lands lease. So we have confirmed feasibility, and there is a strategy for encumbering that submerged lands lease. We talked about some of the upland amenities that they're seeing with other mooring fields. Just real quick, back to the submerged lands lease. A project of this scale actually has to go to Tallahassee to Governor's Cabinet for approval. So there is a process that's involved with that. Interestingly enough, the city, we'll talk about it in a couple minutes, because the city is a municipality, there's a way to actually get a no revenue lease, which means there's no, you don't have to pay any rent versus a revenue generating operation. And we talked about flexibility in terms of the permitting and then relative to potentially building the mooring field in stages. And then a very, very key outcome of the meetings is this mooring field has to be accessible to the public, meaning it has to be first come, first serve. Obviously, there'll be a management plan that's required by FWC, but it will be first come, first serve. Next slide. Here are just roughly some costs. Staff asked us to look at doing everything kind of in one stage or in one phase, and here's kind of the range of the costs for design and permitting versus also the construction. The recommendation the consultants have provided to staff is to go ahead and design and permit it at one time and to encumber the entire area, especially since if it's a non-revenue generating operation, there's no lease cost. The bottom table shows if it would be a revenue-generating operation, the lease cost actually would be $2.5 million a year. This is the highest state lands lease rate in the state because we are in what's called Biscayne Bay Aquatic Preserve. As Amy mentioned, you know, the OFW, the Outstanding Florida Waters. So there's an increased cost for the lease rate as compared to other communities and other areas of Florida that are not in an aquatic preserve. But this non-revenue generating operation is really an important component in looking at the financials on this project. But our recommendation is to move forward with design and permitting of all four phases and then construct in either one phase or possibly construct all three phases at the same time. And that's the range of cost. From about 2.2 up to about $3.2 million for construction. Now, this does not include the upland facilities, and it does not include, we have an allowance, you know, for some submerged lands cleanup. Part of the permits require the permittee to actually sweep, literally, the submerged lands, remove the derelict vessels, debris, and things like that. We have an allowance in there, but until we do some more detailed mapping, we won't be able to quantify those costs. Next slide. This is roughly just a time frame for design and permitting, whether we do it in one stage, two stages. Obviously, there's some cost savings in designing and permitting at once and then constructing it at different phases, so we're looking at roughly of an implementation schedule between two to 6 years after notice to proceed and permits are submitted. Next slide. I think this wraps it up. Our recommendation is to move forward with developing the layout for four phases. We would obtain permits for 10 years, so you could actually build the future phases within that 10-year period, or look at potentially extending the permits. But it gives you a lot of flexibility. You can make some changes, you know, depending on the market and demand for these slips. Our recommendation also is to have discussions with basically a non-revenue generating operator and evaluate management options. That's going to be a requirement when you submit for applications. You need to have an operational plan, who's going to be running it, and the upland facilities. Our recommendation is to move forward with permitting about 200 slips. We can make some adjustments to that in the planning and design phases and based on feedback from the community and others. And I mentioned earlier the phasing allows us to kind of adapt to the market, you know, depending on the size vessels. The water is actually pretty deep, so we can look at, you know, vessels ranging from 40 to 60 feet or even 70 feet, looking at sailboats, you know, powerboats, the range vessels. There has been discussions on the number of slips that would be identified for short-term rentals, so people just come here for like a week or something before they're going to be sailing off to the Bahamas. The mooring field would be an interesting amenity to attract visitors to the community that would purchase food and beverages and provision and take on supplies and visit the city. Might have, you know, friends or guests that stay in hotels. So we would definitely recommend from an operational standpoint that a certain number of the slips be reserved for what we call short-term rentals, and that might be like a week at a time or even 3 days at a time. And then the rest of the mooring balls would be set aside for longer term on a monthly basis, like some of the other cities and counties do here in Miami-Dade County. Also, a recommendation for moving forward is to seek additional funding. There's quite a bit of precedent for grants. There's two or three grants that would probably pay for about 75% of the construction. We would be looking for some additional funding to perhaps even reduce that 25% local cost share even more. On the lease side of things, we're still talking with the state that if this was a non-revenue generating facility, if there was a way to offset some of the debt service, you know, for the capital investment for that 25% or 50% cost share from the revenue of the facility. So we're still in discussions with the state on that, but we do think that that's feasible. So I think that's it. Next slide. Yep. So any questions?
So just. I want to turn this back over to you. It's your item. But before I do that, can you just explain to me again this non-revenue versus revenue and how that does it mean if there's a not-for-profit? Or explain to me how that works, because it does seem like it's going to affect whether or not we get at the state level a free permit, or we're going to be paying the state a fee. I think that's what I heard.
Correct. And to clarify, the non-revenue generating would be essentially a not-for-profit. So
it doesn't mean there's no revenue.
Correct.
It just means there's no profit. It's a not-for-profit. It means that we could still charge rental.
Yes.
for the slip or whatever it is, the buoy.
Yes, and that's something that we're looking at in terms of, since the city would be looking at doing this at phases. Something, a question we have with the state, and it'll have to be evaluated, we think is feasible, is that if a pro forma, a financial analysis could be prepared where whatever the cost differential, the local share then could be covered by the revenue. But the revenue from the mooring field would cover the operations, it would cover the maintenance, and some other allowances for maybe security and things like that. And that would be, so there would essentially be no profit. That's correct.
Sure. Yeah, I think. thank you for that presentation. Let me just take a step back. Either you or Amy can address this. If we do nothing, right, just forget the mooring field, what happens? What does that look like?
Sure.
Because you throw out terms like short-term rentals and people freak out, but there's nothing to prevent them from coming today.
Yeah. I mean, sure, we have overwhelmingly heard from residents and, you know, our own Marine Patrol, the issues that were being seen out there right now, from the behavior perspective to pollution issues to damage of seagrass, and just overall it's a little bit like the Wild West, and they don't have the ability to actually regulate these vessels because we don't have a mooring field. What the mooring field does is lay down those rules that need to be enforced. We have had meetings with Marine Patrol on this. They want to work closely with the city on how to establish the different rules. They even threw out wanting to inspect the different boats that would be able to be admitted into the mooring field to make sure that it's, you know, has high quality and responsible boat owners.
Right. So what happens now for those, you know, who haven't looked at this issue? The city doesn't have really much control, if any, over our waterways. So anybody can literally park their boat there abandoned it, you know, and we would have no way of knowing who that owner is, where they went. We see that all the time and more now. So a boat might sink or, you know, become derelict, and then it's just polluting our bay, becoming a water hazard, for one. We literally don't know who is on that boat, so you might have a criminal, you know, on that boat in our city. We wouldn't have any way of knowing that. The mooring field allows you to require folks as they come into our waterways, check in with a harbor master, register their boat, give us contact information, because if something should happen to the boat or that owner's unruly, we would know who they are and could take appropriate action, among many things that a mooring field does. I mean, that there's a revenue-generating opportunity, which is quite nice, but beyond that, this allows us to get control over our waterways in an orderly fashion. On top of it, it also looks nice, because right now they can park, and they do park, any which way they want. With a mooring field, as some of those overheads show, it's quite orderly and quite beautiful. You can see it in Dinner Key Marina, for example, down in Coconut Grove. So there's a litany of reasons, pros, you know, to do this, and very few, if any, cons to do this. The question is, in my mind, not just moving forward with this, but in what phases, you know, what is the grant process like? Is this something the city wants to take on? You didn't mention, I think there's private contractors out there that we could turn this over to and let them deal with the hassle and run it for us, and we'd get a fee for that. But, you know, I'm strongly supportive of this to move forward. There's details that need to be worked out, but I'm strongly supportive of this and really struggle to find many objections to not do it.
100% supportive. I know that everybody's discharging their gunk in the bay and there's no regulation. I would move forward as quickly as possible. I'm not sure that we're going to get permission to do this mooring field, though, given the state of Biscayne Bay and what the county is doing. Do you think it's going to be a big reach, or do you think
actually,
it'll be okay? They so want it?
Actually, Commissioner, that's why we took this planning time to meet with all of the regulators. And they were very, I think, pleased and welcomed, you know, our desire to begin to regulate all of this, and they were overwhelmingly supportive. What we needed to understand is sort of all the different steps we have to go through from the regulatory perspective, and they gave us all of that information early on so that we could plan better. That's part of the reason why we're recommending today that the boundaries of the mooring field be the entire four phases, and we can't move forward until we know that, because there's additional environmental surveys that have to be done, and it really impacts the design and permitting.
Yeah. Well, I would vote for the most aggressive option of the three, because I think it's necessary. So,
is that a motion?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, and, so, and I would second it. Can you talk about privatizing this? Because my concern, I love our city, but we move at city pace. Would we move quicker and possibly, you know, in a more risk-free manner if we were to ask a private contractor to do this for us? Because I just think they'll just move quicker and possibly more economically than we will.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to discuss that, you know, with our procurement director. We have briefly. We did learn that the mooring field has to be public, and it has to, you know, and we've got to keep it public, and it needs to be run without profit. So we already have a team of contractors that, as a city, that are at our disposal to use to go forward. From our understanding, the design and permitting is the hardest part, and the construction's pretty easy. So I think there's an option there we can look into. We do need to issue a procurement in terms of the management of the mooring field. It would need to be a competitive procurement to see who's interested, and I think we'll learn a lot there as well.
So come on up. I know you want to comment on this, and I'd like to hear your comments.
Thank you.
Tell us who you are.
Terry Beanstock. I'm with the Sunset Islands 3 and 4 Association, and also working coordination with all the Bayfront owners on all four Sunset Islands. You've been to our meetings.
Exactly.
2312 Bay Avenue. So I'm in the same area. We're not against mooring fields. As a concept, they're fine. But the law that we want followed is the law of unintended consequences. This is the toothpaste coming out one end when you squeeze it. Once you squeeze these 200 boats that are there now, they have to go somewhere. Some will stay and pay, but I think we all know that a lot of them will not, and they'll just seek to relocate. Once you do the mooring field all the way to 5th from Sunset Harbor, there's only one place for them to go, and that's up north along the Sunset Islands. What we have tried to make clear is that two things we see need to happen before, or certainly no later than simultaneous with the establishment of mooring field, and we haven't heard that discussed this morning. State legislation. County legislation can have some impact by creating an anti-mooring field area, but it's really the state that has the most control, and the Venetians already protected. North Bay Road's already protected. The only ones not protected are the Sunset Islands. And so, respectfully, it's nice to want to protect derelict, boats and people who want to live on their boat for free. We pay hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes, and these people pay no taxes. And all we ask for is that our quality of life not be deteriorated when you do this establishment. The Bay waters are disgusting. I've been here for 36 years. I used to look down in my backyard and see tropical fish and blue water and moray eels and lobsters, and now I see this green sludge with foam. So I'm thrilled anything that we can do to improve the quality of the Bay, as we all are. But we need the state legislation done now, because it takes years to get done, and we don't want to be, don't worry, we'll take care of it. Because the boats are going to move. As soon as this is established, they're in front of us. And that's the second point, is enforcement. It's so nice to say, we can do this, and we can do this, and we can make sure they're not criminals, and we can make sure they're this and that. There's zero enforcement now, virtually zero enforcement now, for derelict boats. When we met with the Coast Guard folks and the Marine Patrol folks, they mean well, but they don't have the budget to enforce. And they don't have the mechanism, the tools to enforce. Again, that's something that has to be done now. Serious, reliable enforcement mechanisms, so we solve the problem. We don't just move it to another neighborhood.
Yeah. So I know, and I was happy to meet with all of you, and I understand your concern on that area in terms of boats moving. I will tell you, subsequent to the meeting that we had, I've had some discussions. I think there's very little appetite at the state level. Those areas that were set aside previously, it took a number of years. I was there at the time. I remember this. It took a number of years, and in talking with the advocates that worked on that, I think there's some concern if they go back and try to get another area, everything may be lost. So I think our best hope, and we were looking at the county, because the county now has the authority to do this no anchorage area. And so, Amy, do we know where Commissioner Higgins' office is with the county mayor? Is that going to take another year? Is that going to take 6 months? Or do we have any idea?
At this point, I think that they have prepared something. They've introduced an item, and I think it's on hold from another county commissioner. So that is the latest I have. I did invite their office today, but they were out of office, our main contact there. But they are aware it's an issue. Many neighborhoods have reached out to the county commissioner's office, including, Star and Hibiscus and Palm Islands. They've also reached out and had one-on-one meetings with the commissioner's office.
Yeah, and I think one of the concerns that we may see at the county level is they may be concerned if they designate one area, then that pushes boats to another area, and that area wants it, and then it pushes it to another area. So I don't know what appetite the county's going to have, but that's something that we should look at. So I think we're all in agreement that we want to move forward with this, but it has to be done carefully, and it has to be done with consideration of these issues that could be problematic. So, Commissioner, where are we with the next step be to come back with a budget in terms of and a phasing period? I know from our consultant we just had we could do this over a 2 or 6 year period, but I'm going to want to hear from the county on this. There's a new provision on this no anchorage area that the state has given counties to designate, and that's something that I know we were looking at. And so for me, I need more information on that if the county's going to move forward with this. I think this is a terrific idea, but I am worried about the boats, especially in Sunset Harbor, moving a little bit if they, and again, the channel, you know, there's the width of the channel. It's not legal for them to moor in an active channel. But that stretch that's from the west of Sunset 2, not all of it is an active channel, so people could move their boats into that area, and that could be problematic.
Yeah, and if I may, Commissioner, the most important thing we need today is a motion to move forward with the four boundaries, because we really are a little bit stuck until we do that. At that point, our consultant can begin working on, you know, all of those details. One of the things we've discussed is, you know, also identifying anchoring limitation areas consistent with the mooring field, so that as we present the planning, it's part of the overall plan and not left off. So that's something we can share with the county commission and with that office to show it's part of a concerted, you know, comprehensive planning process.
Well, in light of what I'm hearing, which is concerning, we propose then that the mooring field just be in the original concept of mooring field, limited to the Sunset Harbor area, and not go all the way down to 5th, because then those boats don't have to move that are down between Sunset Harbor and 5th. They can stay there, but they're not going to be pushed north. And so that will at least mitigate the consequences of a mooring field being established. Once you designate that entire big area, it forces all those boats to move. And this way you could just focus on what, and this is, by the way, you know, not what we recommended. Your own committee recommended only the Sunset Harbor area for the mooring field. It got expanded through the process that Amy undertook, you know, the last 2 years.
I actually believe it will happen in the opposite way. That my opinion is that if the Sunset Harbor more could create more of a potential issue for your community.
No, because they could go south. Then they could go south or north. And we're still, right, so we have more
that's
channel.
Very neighborly of you. So well, don't make it your problem. Make it your other neighbor's problems.
But
see, we sit in a city commission
we're told
capacity.
The West Avenue doesn't
we, I'm talking. We sit in a city commission. We have to do what's best for the entire city. So you're saying, hey, just push it to the people that live on West Avenue so that I don't have to deal with it. That's not very neighborly of you. And our job is to do what's best for the entire city, as well as protect our bay, as well as protect the boaters that are coming here. So I understand why you're saying what you're saying, but I don't think that's the right move.
Well, I'm not trying to be not neighborly, just the opposite. I've talked to West Avenue folks. My understanding is they're comfortable with the boats they have there now, because they have no mooring. They have no marinas down to 5th. And so they're happy to have any mooring area, illegal or legal. So it's a different consequence. We have nothing right now, essentially no boats moored there, and this will only increase it for us. For them, it would stay the same or be a minimal difference, and they don't seem to be concerned about it. They're the ones advocating for
a
mooring field.
I've actually had people in West Avenue tell me they're ready for a mooring field there. So they want it there because they see derelict boats and they see people they don't believe are taking care of their waste properly.
My druthers. Yeah. We're fine with the mooring field. We just don't want all those boats to us. And now I'm hearing that's likely to happen.
I don't know that that's likely to happen. I think that I wouldn't jump to that conclusion. Let's do this. What you came for is guidance on design and permitting. And you didn't come to say let's start the construction, because it's a long process. So there's support for design and permitting for the four areas. And then We're not making any recommendation on construction. It's going to take quite a period of time for you to be able to go through that process. In the meantime, I need you all to continue working with the county. And if we can't resolve this with the county, then we may go through this process and the commission may not support construction unless we're able to resolve some of these nuanced issues. But I don't see any concern with moving forward with design and permitting. Go ahead.
Why can't we just include the area that you're concerned about in this mooring field planning process? Because the idea here is not to attract people. It's to regulate the bad operators that are there right now. Would you be okay with that? Because I think the idea...
Extend the mooring field to where we are?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think it can be because it's a... I don't think it can be because...
It's all channel?
It's not all channel, but it's enough channel that it would be... I don't think you could have a mooring field there.
It might be in your benefit because let's say that you add some mooring field there and then we could put up some signs saying no speeding here, manatee zone, you know, really discourage people from going over there. You know, I think signage plays a large role. I don't know what we can do, but I mean, to exclude them in this planning phase, maybe we'd end up having to go back and we're creating an unintended consequence. I don't know. I want to do this because they really are sullying these boats are terrible. There's homeless people living on these boats. They are discharging into the bay. There's zero regulation, and this permitting takes so long. I mean, I would do whatever I can to possibly find out if we could include them so we could regulate their area too and remove bad actors if they move over there.
Well, I would say that I don't think that community wants a mooring field in their backyard because when I was at the state, the problem is that legally boats can literally pull up in your backyard and drop an anchor.
Well, they can do that right now.
I know. Exactly. And I don't think that community wants a mooring field in their backyard. I mean, it is, I don't know of any other area where single family homes have a mooring field off their backyard. I mean, where Sunset Harbor is different from West Avenue, is different from Sunset Island too. So, all right. Well, I want to move forward with this. I think we've got consensus that we're going to we're recommending design and permitting to move forward, and at the same time urging you to continue working with the county on this provision that allows them to designate no anchorage area. The other thing that would be helpful is if we can either ourselves or our consultant find out how wide that channel is, because you cannot anchor in an active channel, and so we need to find out what area outside to the west of this Sunset 2 and 3 area, and 4 too, I believe, is it would it be a 4 as well, and 1, how wide is the channel, and what areas we would need the county to designate as a no-anchor area, okay? They don't need to do that for an active channel because that's already the law, but the area. So that's the information we need. Okay.
Mr. Chair, before you close the item out, there is one virtual caller. Would you like to hear from?
Sure. Public? Give them 2 minutes.
Sergeant Resendi, go ahead.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you? Good morning, everybody. I was raising my hand basically to voice my concern of exactly what the gentleman said right now about displacing everybody. I believe if we are going to do an ordinance, it should be something that, I mean, or anchorage for that matter, I'm sorry. We should be working on some sort of ordinance preventing these vessels from just basically moving to the other side of the channel or around the other homes as Stoller Island, Palm, Hibiscus, all those other areas where they're going to be moved to. That's my only concern I would have with the ordinance.
Thank you very much. And we don't have the authority to do that because waterways are guided by the state of Florida. So this body, the city doesn't have the authority. However, the state has given the county the right to designate no anchorage areas, and that's what we're working with the county to see what we could work out. But we're not moving forward with any construction. We're moving forward with design and permitting. Go ahead.
And if I may, through the chair, This would need a recommendation for this year's budget process. We currently have $273,000 that we've obtained through grant funding. We would need another $227,000 more to begin the design and permitting for all four phases.
And I heard that there was an opportunity for more grants. Is that something we're working on, or is that just the construction phase?
So this would be for design and permitting. Now that we would have the go-ahead on the boundaries, we can apply for further grants.
Yeah, so I'm okay with that a bit. I'm okay. Yes.
Thank you.
What else do you need? Anything?
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay. And please, let's can we bring this back in a couple of months
sure.
to get a status on where we are with the county? I mean, this is really going to be critical to me. I want to move forward with this as quickly as we can, but it's really critical that we work with the county on this no anchorage issue. Okay? Thank you. Because I think if we wait for this state, we'll be waiting 10 years. Or longer. Thank you for your comments. Okay, this item's closed. Let's go back to item number one. I don't know if, is Jose here? Yeah. Jose, have you had a chance to meet with anybody? I know you
have.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. All right. Go ahead. Let's tee this one up and see where we're at.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. Jose Gonzalez, Transportation and Mobility Director. So at the last time that we were before you, we presented a concept that we're recommending to try to improve the pickup and drop-off operations at Miami Beach Senior High. The concept, which is included as part of the item, proposes a new pickup and drop-off lane. It would be two lanes, but the second lane would be more for bypassing, so that once a parent drops off, they can then get on that second lane and bypass and exit. So it would be a two-lane pickup drop-off lane situated between where the existing bus loop is and the sidewalk on the north side of Dade Boulevard. So we shared that with both County Public Works and Transportation Department as well as Miami-Dade County School Board for their feedback. Particularly the school board's perspective feedback was critically important since this would be partially on their property. So we shared that with them. Unfortunately, they did express that they did not support the concept. They don't believe that it's going to be very effective. The goal that what we're trying to achieve is to get parents to not drop off the students on Dade Boulevard itself, which then promotes that student to jaywalk across, even though Dade Boulevard has two crosswalks, one at Prairie and one at Washington Avenue that connect to the school. A lot of students just take, you know, that path of that straight line path and jaywalk. So what we were trying to do was create this lane that would be for that purpose. Their concern, or the school board's concerns, range from they say that's not going to change the parents' behavior, that if parents still want to drop off there, they will drop off. And what will happen is if they drop off mid-block and the student jaywalks, now the student has to cross more lanes because you'll have the two lanes of the bus loop, which has two lanes, plus these two new two lanes. So it'll be four lanes that students may just jaywalk across, and that may actually jeopardize safety more than anything else. We understand that, but, you know, we felt that perhaps through education and whatnot, there could be a way to, you know, guide students to use the crosswalks and enter at the correct locations. What the school board did proffer as something that they could do on an immediate basis is to install a fence, a chain link fence, a coated fence about 4 feet high. They would do so on the north side of the sidewalk there in front of the school. And the fence would basically be, it would extend from entry point to entry point so that even if a student jaywalks across Dade Boulevard, they'll be encountered with a fence and then they'll have to walk anyways either to their left or to the right to enter the school. So the idea is that sooner or later the students will get the hang of it and cross at the crosswalks, which is a direct entrance into the school. The chain link fence would be at their cost. It's something that they're prepared to do rather quickly, but they did not support our concept It didn't seem that there was even room there for any much, more negotiations. We did share that with the new superintendent, as well as school board members and the Quality of Education Committee, so that they're aware of the school board's position.
So have you been to the QEC and talked to them, or just select members?
Previously,
or?
But not
okay, so let's
since.
Do this. Because I brought this item because the QEC made a motion. So let's do this. Let's continue the item, John, and bring it back in, say, maybe July before we leave. And then in the meantime, Jose, if you would go to the next, get with Leslie and get on the agenda for the next QEC meeting, go present to them and tell them what you just told us. I'm not sure that we want a chain link fence on Dade Boulevard. It's not the most sightly thing. We've got such a beautiful landscaped area there with the golf course and the beautiful condo. So talk to the QEC and see if that's what they want. Do we have anyone calling in, Rafael?
Not on this item.
Okay. Lewis is telling me QEC doesn't meet until August. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's going to be the next opportunity. So, John, let's bring this back in September then, okay, because we won't be able to do anything on this. In the meantime, can you, Jose, meet with Leslie so she doesn't wait till August and let her know what's going on, because mm-hmm. The committee – has been asking what the status of this is. But it doesn't sound like there is support from the school board and it's their property. But I'm not sure a chain link fence is going to look very sightly there. Okay. John, you have what you need? All right, let's close this out. Let's move on.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jose, for your help. I appreciate that. Let's call up number 7 on this lease agreement. Is that you, Elizabeth? Tell us what you have here. Sounds like we're potentially generating some revenue for the city.
We are. We're excited about this one. Okay, so we have a vacancy at Anchor Shops at 1560 Collins, suites numbers 3 and 4. It's been vacant since July 31st of 2021. Thereafter, in August, we started marketing this space through our city-approved brokerage firm, and we were able to secure through a letter of intent, through Open Vision, a potential fine dining experience there. And what we were doing, what we're proposing, is a 9-year lease, 362 days. The rent structure will be $75 a square foot and $14 a square foot for common area maintenance. This will provide us with at least $377,000 a year in the first year, and it has a 3% annual escalation. The proposing tenant will, at his sole expense, renew the whole entire space. He will take the space as is and renovate it. And it's an exciting experience.
Is it the recommendation of the administration that we accept this offer?
Absolutely, and move forward to commission.
When we lease out these properties, is mm-hmm. there any reason why we don't follow a percentage rent model?
Well, in this case, we provide the percentage rents in terms of the escalation. Is that what you're referring?
Increase?
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, some of, these certain businesses, when we do rent, sometimes these items work on percentages. I was just wondering what would be greater.
Like percentage of gross revenues.
Yeah, percentage of gross revenue. Mm-hmm. We never do that.
No. We have in the past when we've had to do amendments, like we did, for instance, for Yuka, when we did it on a temporary basis just to get them up to speed. But typically, this is going to provide you better revenue. The city will probably secure about $4.3 million through the course of the initial term.
Okay.
And for some transactions, we have done that, like the Smith & Walensky lease has a percentage of gross revenues, and your concession agreements primarily will have a minimum, guaranteed revenues and percentage rent as well.
Out of curiosity, what is the percentage rent on the Smith deal?
I don't recall offhand, Commissioner.
I don't recall offhand, but we can certainly get back to you.
I just wanted to see what could mm-hmm. potentially be, more lucrative for us over time.
Right. John, do you have any concerns about this?
No, we don't.
Are you okay with mm-hmm. this? Commissioner, are you
okay? I'm okay with it.
Okay, so show it done unanimously. We'll send it back to the commission with a recommendation, okay?
Excellent.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. Which item, Raquel, which item are you here for? I'm sorry? 14, come on up. Let's get that. I want to get you both back to work.
Just to frame it for you guys, we're getting about $350,000 in revenue. I believe it's yearly, right? But if we put this on like a 6% revenue with like a minimum, with a cap, we could get $720,000 provided they did, you know, $1 million a month, which if it's a luxury dining experience right there on Collins Ave, they most certainly will. So this is fine, and I know that they're excited about it, but there's a potential to get double in future deals.
Well, I think what this is going to the commission, so
I know. I mean,
you'll be able to do some more work on it and see if that's something that you want to recommend. Raquel, go ahead. We're going to call up item 14.
Sure. This item is related to a discussion that was referred by Commissioners Rosen, Gonzalez, and Fernandez to talk about a potential waiver of the sustainability fee and any other fees to promote affordable and workforce housing. And you should have a hard copy of the memo in front of you. So this referral item also cited the Collins Park Artist Workforce Housing Project, which, as you know, is a unique opportunity for the city to provide for 80 units of workforce housing, as well as a 32-bed dormitory space and 2,200 square feet of ground floor activation for cultural purposes. And so the lack of affordable and workforce housing in the city, you know, I'm sure this, you know, has been discussed by several committees and by the commission. We've highlighted some of the previous discussions over the past several years and some of the attempts to promote affordable and workforce housing and what the city has done. So, you know, based on high land costs, construction costs, shortage of land, as well as increasing demand but limited supply, we see that housing prices are just continuing to rise. And so we know that this issue needs to be addressed. We want to ensure that our population has an opportunity to live and work in the city. 83% of the employees in our city do not live in our city, and so that's something that we want to change. This will help to promote resilience and sustainability within our community. This is also going to improve quality of life. So we do want to highlight that the strategic plan, the 2019 plan, as well as the comprehensive plan, they both promote affordable and workforce housing, and the city has utilized different measures, and we are anticipating that this discussion today could lead to additional measures that would help to move this initiative forward to increase the inventory and housing stock of affordable and workforce housing. So we first highlighted the sustainability fee, and so essentially that fee is required for those projects that are eligible. So if it's a new construction project of over 7,000 square feet, or if it's a renovation adding 10,000 square feet, the projects would need to achieve LEED Gold certification or be required to pay 5% of the construction value. And so that could be a significant challenge for affordable and workforce housing projects that are already working within the margins. They already have issues with securing financing. There are limitations with the amount of revenue that can be generated based on the income restrictions. And so the sustainability fee has been very successful in that 51 projects have come forward, and only 4 of them have been required to pay the fee and have not achieved the LEED Gold certification. However, none of those projects are affordable or workforce housing projects. So it's not to say that, you know, achieving the sustainability goals for the city is very easy across all types of projects, because we haven't seen affordable and workforce projects come through. So in terms of the Collins Park project, it's estimated that the sustainability fee is about $843,000. Moving on to the mobility fee, there is a discussion pending at land use. I know there was a referral, I think, Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, it was your referral, to have that discussion about waiving the mobility fee. It was deferred at the last meeting, and it's going to be discussed in June. In terms of Collins Park, the mobility fee is estimated at about $50,000. Going on to the technology and training surcharge on building permits, this fee is, it does not apply to affordable or workforce housing projects, so they are both exempt. When we look at the park's concurrency fee, Workforce housing projects are not exempt. However, affordable housing projects are exempt from this fee. For Collins Park, that's about $35,000 worth of fees. For art in public places, neither affordable or workforce housing projects are exempt, and that's 2% of the hard cost. For Collins Park, that's about $330,000. The administration is recommending that all workforce housing projects and affordable housing projects be exempt from the following fees: sustainability, mobility, parks concurrency, DRB, HPB, and Board of Adjustment fees, as well as art in public places, with the caveat that for art in public places projects, only the projects that really enhance the arts and cultural climate in the city could be eligible based on the City Commission's sole discretion. We consider Collins Park Artist Workforce Housing Project to be one such project because it promotes housing for artists. It also provides for supporting our cultural anchor, the Miami City Ballet, with the dormitory spaces, as well as activating the ground floor for cultural uses. So we provided a summary table at the end of the memo. You'll see that there are three exemptions that apply to affordable housing projects that do not apply to workforce housing projects, and those are mobility, parks concurrency, and DRB, HPB, and Board of Adjustment fees. There are two fees that are not waived across affordable or workforce housing projects, and those are the sustainability fee and art in public places.
Yeah. So, and it's your item, so I'm going to hand it to you in just a minute, but I didn't understand the last piece on your recommendation on art in public places. So you need to go over that and maybe go a little bit slower.
So for art in public places projects, those apply to all city projects, whether they're developed by the private sector on city-owned land or whether the city is doing the development. In the past, the city has provided for waivers of art in public places fees for certain geobond projects. The administration is proposing that for projects that promote arts and culture and significantly enhance the artistic and cultural climate in the city, we think that the AIPP fee should be waived for those such projects.
So what did you say, though, about Collins? You said except for or something, so I didn't understand that piece.
We think that the Collins Park Artist Workforce Housing Project would be a great candidate for a waiver of AIPP because of all of the aspects included in the project that promote cultural activity and support the artist community.
So are you recommending, is the administration recommending that all affordable housing and workforce housing projects would have a waiver on the art in public places?
Subject to the commission's determination, but based on criteria such as the project's ability to support arts and culture in the city.
So that's the part that's confusing for me, because it seems like we need to have a rule that's black and white and not be confusing so that we're not in the future debating it. Commissioner, it's your item, so let me turn it over to you.
Thank you. So I know that the Housing Authority has several projects being built across the city right now. Do any of these discounts that we're talking about for the Collins Park project already apply to the Housing Authority? Are they getting the same advantages, or are they paying for art in public places and the technology fees also?
Typically, the projects that the Housing Authority is undertaking, those are projects at the affordable level or 80% of the area median income. So when we talk about affordable, we're talking up to 80%, and then when we're talking workforce housing, we're talking up to 140% based on city code, and that is the same for Miami-Dade County as well. So the projects that the Housing Authority is undertaking, if they are at 80% AMI, they are benefiting from all of the exemptions that exist today for affordable housing projects, and those are mobility, technology and training surcharge, parks concurrency, DRB, HPB, and BOA fees. What they are not benefiting from is an exemption of sustainability or art in public places, and neither category of housing benefits from that at this point.
And the Housing Authority, if the project is not on city-owned land, then the AIPP requirement would not apply to them for that fee. But certainly the sustainability fee would apply to them. You know, these projects, I just want to underscore what Raquel, you know, mentioned just by the example of the Collins Park project. One fee to the city, over $800,000 on a project that has razor-thin margins that we struggled with because it was a public-private partnership, and we were only able to get it completed because the city stepped in.
And just to
interject, fees like this are cost prohibitive for affordable and workforce housing projects.
And just to add to the city attorney's comments, the project is still at the position where it has not secured financing. So the decisions that we make today could impact the outcome of that project.
And this would require if Alex and I both, I mean, I'm sponsoring it, so yeah, I would definitely move it forward. We would just have to amend the LDRs, or how would that work?
Is the sustainability, I think it is in the LDR, so it would require 5 votes. Yeah.
Okay. Here's how I feel about this. One quick thing. The Collins Park, for example, when they say that they're going to be workforce housing, that covenant, from my understanding, only lasts 30 years?
That's for the entirety of the project. So based on the funding source, so their tax-exempt bond financing requires that the project remain workforce housing.
Not in perpetuity, though.
And the lease, for the entirety of the lease term.
Okay, so it will be workforce housing. Okay, then I have no problem with this. My only concern is that we create this and then everybody's building workforce and affordable housing and circumventing all of our fees. And if we do this and in the LDRs, we have to have protections in place so that this doesn't get abused, you know, and it's only specifically for our workforce. And
For private projects, the code provides requires a covenant, and I believe it's a 20-year term. So if you were going to provide additional waivers, you could consider extending the term of the covenant.
Okay. So that's what I would put into the LDRs. If we do give these exemptions and fees, then they would have to extend the covenant on how long they would be affordable workforce. And I would use them all. I think we need to use every tool that we have.
Yeah, so is that a motion?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move this. Here's my concern. First of all, I want to go back to the item on the Collins Park, because I thought the contract had been pretty much finalized, and I know there's a final piece of some debt. It's my understanding that they're very close to closing that out. But you're saying if we were to move this, that could help that deal?
Absolutely. So things are still in flux in terms of construction prices and interest rates, and so the project could negatively be impacted by that. In the agreement, the development agreement and ground lease that we have with the Collins Park project, it does provide that the city can, at the city's sole discretion, waive any fees applicable to the project or refund the project for fees already paid.
Okay, that would be great. I'm fully supportive of this. I'll also, Raphael, if I heard you, the covenant is only a 20-year restriction, is that?
I believe so, for private
projects. So I would be supportive of making a minimum of 30 years. So I would change the 20 to 30. With respect to the Collins Park, you know, the city will be able to make a decision on how long we want to keep that affordable, because as soon as the debt is retired, that entire property, which would be held in a 501c3, mm-hmm. comes to the city. So the city's going to own that. I mean, we base it, for all intents and purposes, we own it, except for the financing model is that the workforce housing is put in a 501c3 until the debt is retired. Once that debt is retired, that 501c3 comes to the city, and we will own it as a city property. So then the city could decide that they want to continue to have affordable workforce housing in there until the end of time. I have a feeling that the future commission would want to do that.
Additionally, on an annual basis, the city will be monitoring the budget process for the project every year. And so if the project does allow for some of the current workforce housing units to go to 100% or 80% AMI, then we have the opportunity to allow for that as well.
Yeah. So I'm fully supportive of the motion and getting this to commission. And it's just a resolution at the commission?
We would have ordinance amendments.
No, there's ordinance. Okay.
So then if there's a way that we can get first and second reading before we leave for the August, and if it's the will of the commission to do this, because I think to the extent that it could help the Collins Park workforce housing project, I think we should try to make that happen, because I know there are some issues. I think the debt is pretty much going to be finalized very soon from what I've heard. because I've been waiting. They're not going to submit their proposal on the Byron Carlisle Workforce Housing and Cultural Center until this is closed out, and they're telling me it's very close.
And remember, our Housing Authority is building two major projects right now in North Beach, and this will help both of those projects move forward because I know that they had a gap in funding too. So, and, you know, their architecture, the way that they're building the new projects in North Beach is really they're showcasing different types of architecture. So I think that's, you know, a good replacement or justification for the waiver of the art in public places.
Could I just get clarification on that AIPP comment earlier? Did you want the waiver to be across the board or with certain caveats at the discretion?
I'm okay across the board.
Across the board, me if too. It's workforce and affordable housing. Okay.
Commissioner?
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to speak about. Yeah, I would strongly urge us to do it across the board.
We can also retain the right to vote per project on it, if you'd like to do that. I mean, we could waive the fees, you know, looking at each project. I mean,
I think that, for me, that's too complicated that we shouldn't have to get in the weeds on that. Let's just do it. We need workforce housing. We need affordable housing in the city, and we should try to encourage people to use this model, and they will know what the rules are, and that they don't have to come to the body and negotiate with us. So
well, we will endeavor to bring the items forward as soon as we can, given the notice requirements that...
Can you have can we have the first reading by June?
We'll try.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
If we could do first reading in June, that would be great, and then in July, Commissioner.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about AIPP, so I'm glad we discussed it. The other thing, colleagues have said it now a few times, thank you, Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, for bringing this forward. I think it certainly will help. But if we're really going to impact workforce housing, one is we have to really commit to actually seeing stuff built. And we have to this helps a tiny bit, but not enough. We're going to have to really look at increasing FAR and or creating transfer of development rights if we really want to tackle workforce housing. I'm not going to put it for the ballot this year, we already have too many, but I am going to work on creating some proposals for our consideration to take to voters probably the next year, because if we're going to actually do workforce housing, we have to do it, and the only way to do it economically is to increase FAR and or create transfer development rights. Otherwise, it's all talk.
I agree, especially I'm very interested in learning more about the transfer development rights. I think there's some real potential there. So, okay, let's close.
Particularly with historic properties, so it's a win-win. But I'll work on it.
I mean, that's part of the problem we have with the Barclay is that people have looked at it, right? I mean, it's very hard property to develop. The economics don't make sense right now. So unless we do something with that property, it's just going to sit there because developers. It's just not economically feasible to work on. All right. We're closing this
by the way, about the Barclay, I spoke to Commissioner Higgins, and if we cede this property to the county and they put a covenant on it to make sure that it remains workforce affordable housing, they have the funding to renovate it.
Thank you.
Great.
Commissioner, item 15. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. So this is a follow-up item from I'm sorry, did you want to see it up?
Okay.
So this is a follow-up to the discussion that we had last month's FERC. The committee requested that the administration propose a policy for incentivizing businesses to come to the city or to remain in the city by utilizing parking resources. And so we did provide a proposal that offers a three-year pilot that would accommodate five companies. We anticipate wanting to do a step-down approach. So in the first year, we would provide for up to the value of 20 access cards, and that value is about $25,000. And then we would step down to 75% at about $19,000, and then down to 50% at about $13,000. And so we have outlined here a three-year approach starting in fiscal year 2023. So if we were to accommodate five companies, that's about $130,000 in that first fiscal year, and then it would step down to $97,000, and then in year three, $64,000. we have some eligibility criteria in place. We want to ensure that the businesses taking advantage of this opportunity are businesses that have a lease in place of commercial space that at least spans the three-year period. And if not, we want to see a renewal option that would allow the business to continue to operate in the city. We want to ensure that the businesses are in good standing and not have any current litigation with the city, no code violations. We want to focus on certain industries, including hospitality, health and wellness, tech and financial services, and limited to those. We feel that those are industries that we either want to promote and support and grow, or we want to try to attract them to the city. There would be an application process made available online, and the administration would review applications and submit recommendations to the Finance Committee for its consideration and recommendation to the City Commission.
Commissioner Hill, it's your item.
Yeah, I mean, I'm supportive in trying to do everything we can to attract or retain businesses that we think are good for our city. Parking is one of those tools. I'm also mindful of the limitations we have around parking as well as limitation around our bonding requirements. So I think this will be a small tool unless we create a lot more parking. But I just want this in our toolbox. So
let me ask a question. I'm looking at the chart, and again, we just got this last night, so I haven't really studied it in detail. But the first year, $130,000, and then it steps down. But I thought we were considering having it step down so we could bring new people into the program. So would it really step down, or would it, as people step down, we'd be bringing new people in, so it'd be the same amount?
Well, we did consider adding new businesses year after year, but ultimately that would just extend the pilot period. So, for example, if a company came in year two and we wanted to provide it for 3 years, now we're at a four-year pilot. If we brought them in year three, now we're at a six-year pilot or five-year pilot. So we wanted to see how this might work, just starting off in year one, allowing for five companies to come in and, you know, definitely gauge the interest. And if the commission wanted to do something further and, you know, sustain this program over time, we just wanted to be cautious.
I understand. Thank you. So what we could do is approve the pilot program this year, because the first year amount wouldn't change. And then if we're happy with the way it's going after a year, we could amend the pilot in the next fiscal year to step it up and do more.
That's certainly at your discretion. And the way that we have it outlined now, the total fiscal impact over the three-year pilot is about $290,000.
Monica, are you okay with this?
Absolutely.
Okay. She says absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for coming. Have you moved the item?
I moved it.
I'm going to second the item. Do you have any comments on this?
Where is the pilot? Because I'm looking at item number 15.
Oh,
it
came out in a supplemental last night.
Oh, it did?
Right there.
Oh, I just got this right now. Which area? I just don't, because I went to...
This would be citywide, and I believe this item came out in the first supplemental on Wednesday, and I'm not sure. However, this would be citywide. It wouldn't be specific to any area of the city.
I'm not sure that I'm going to be supportive, but I know you guys are moving it forward today. I haven't read it yet, so...
Okay. Well, we're going to move this to the full commission with a favorable recommendation, and let's try to get it on the June. Do we need to do a resolution on this, or what do we need to do? Or is this just John, is this just something we need to consider in the budget? But we need a resolution on it, I think, don't we, because it's a pilot program?
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe you can get your resolution for June, and then, yeah. John, I think let's put a placeholder for the budget right now. And then let's see how it goes in June and July at the commission.
What is Groot? To encourage Groot to maintain its headquarters in Miami Beach, what is that?
So this discussion began as a discussion of an incentive for Groot Hospitality, a major hospitality industry business here in the city. The Finance Committee did make a recommendation to offer an incentive to Groot and also ask that we come up with an overall policy. So at June's commission meeting, we'll have an item there on Groot, and then we'll also add this policy item.
Well, I think when it came, we said that we're going to treat everybody the same. And so the conversation started with one business entity, but we said we're going to have a program that anyone can apply for. So This is not specific to any one business. It's a program that would be eligible for anyone to apply for.
Correct. And the item we bring forward for group will mirror the policy that
this says here business. That this is specifically for group. But what are they leaving the city? What's going on?
So there were some discussions last fall where Groot had an opportunity to relocate to Miami, and one of the considerations, that was really a fundamental part of their decision-making process was parking availability and access. And so the Finance Committee had this discussion maybe at three meetings and ultimately decided to support Groot in this fashion. Groot has expanded their space. They're a significant member of the Miami Beach business community, and I think the committee thought that it was fitting to provide an incentive for that purpose.
Where is their headquarters?
It's near Lincoln Road. I think it's 1684 or 1688 Meridian.
Okay. I suppose.
Okay. Do you need anything else, Ross, Raphael, John?
Sure.
Okay. That item is closed then, and then I think we've got item 11 left. So we kept you waiting, I'm sorry.
No worries, we're good. Good morning, commissioners. So this is the annual discussion regarding the living wage rate that will be applied to service contracts for calendar year 2023. As you know, the code requires service contractors to pay their employees whatever the city's living wage rate is, which is currently $15.15 an hour without health care benefits or $11.90 per hour with health care benefits of at least $3.25. The code allows the living wage rate to be adjusted annually for any inflation. And I know this is a little premature because we don't have the COLA yet, but the code also restricts any increase to whatever is the COLA increase for unclassified employees. So at some point in this budget process, we have to make a decision whether you recommend a living wage increase that is equitable to a COLA increase, a living wage increase that is less than any COLA increase, or no living wage increase at all. For every 1% increase in the living wage, you're looking at approximately $133,000 budgetary impact. And I don't know if John can share any details on what we think we're looking at for COLA. I don't have that information yet. But your decision will have to be based on – your decision will be – the COLA will be a maximum of any increase you can recommend.
Yeah, all I want to add to that is we are negotiating with all the unions, so none of the CBAs have been finalized, so we do not have the COLAs figured out yet. But I think what we're trying to get direction on here is prior to knowing that so that when we do, we can move quickly. So in other words, do we want to do nothing? Do we want to do the exact same amount that we're planning on doing for the unclassified employees? Or do we want to do something kind of in the middle, something less? So if we could just get some general direction there, we'll be good to go.
Members? Do we? What's the timing on this? So you need some guidance just because you're putting the budget together?
Well, depending on the timing of the CBAs, how that impacts the budget. So if the CBAs are figured out before we can finalize the budget, then we could easily know, okay, it's $130,000 or it's $260,000 and plug it in, finalize the budget. But if we finalize the budget first, then we would have to do some kind of mid-year amendment to figure it out. And the truth is you don't have to make a decision today. It's just if we have any preliminary direction, it's helpful.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Where is this, just to have a comparison, where's the county and the city of Miami?
County is $18.73 an hour without health care benefits or $15.03 plus $3.70 in health care benefits. Miami it has posted, which I believe is incorrect, $15.52 per hour without health care benefits or $12.63 plus $289 in health care benefits.
So you basically want to finish the union negotiations and then increase the living wage based on whatever they choose in terms of percentage of COLA?
Right. The reason COLA is important is because the code says the living wage increase cannot be higher than COLA.
Okay.
Well, the other thing you can do is say go with the COLA increase but no more than, say, a certain dollar amount. And then we would back into the dollar amount.
I mean, I definitely think they should get what everybody else gets.
I agree. So, but we don't know what that's going to be yet, right? Because we're waiting on the collective bargaining.
Correct. We don't know what that amount is, but if you want to make a motion to just match whatever that is, that's fine. Or, I mean, that's what we're looking for. Either match, do something less, or do nothing.
Are you okay to match it?
I think we need to just wait and see what comes back to us and then approve it. I think everybody wants to, do the right thing.
They're looking for some guidance. So in terms
if we could get guidance from this committee, then when it goes to commission, we'll make the real decision,
I'm
right?
Supportive of matching.
And that timing will be different.
I would be supportive of matching it. It seems like the fair and equitable thing to do for mm-hmm. all employees.
Okay.
So if you're okay, are you okay with that? Mm-hmm. Okay, then we'll do that, and then you can send that to the commission, then, that recommendation? Commission.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks. John, Raphael, do we have anything else before us?
Nothing further, sir.
All right. Seeing no other business, we are adjourned. Thanks, colleagues. Thank you so much.